I'm safe, then.
She sounded more convinced of that than she could possibly be. Savardin came noisily out of the bathroom and sank back onto her pallet, hands trembling, breathing quick and shallow. I'm taking my hand out of my coat now, I said, and then did that, slowly. Empty. Striegan sighed and lowered her gun. I probably couldn't shoot you anyway. Because she was sure I was Rodchai military and hence armored. Of course, if she could take me unawares or fire before I could extend my armor, she could indeed shoot me. And of course, she had that gun, though she might not have it near to hand. Can I have my icon back? She frowned and then remembered she was still holding it. Your icon? It belongs to me, I clarified. That's quite a resemblance, she said, looking at it again. Where's it from? Very far away. I held out my hand. She returned it, and one-handed I brushed the trigger and the image folded into itself, and the base closed into its gold disc. Striegan looked over at Savardin intently and frowned. Your stray is having some anxiety. Yes. Striegan shook her head, frustrated or exasperated, and went into her infirmary. She returned, went to where Savardin sat, leaned over and reached for her. Savardin started, shoving herself up and back, grabbing Striegan's wrist in a move I knew was meant to break it. But Savardin wasn't what she had once been. Dissipation and what I suspected was malnutrition had taken a toll. Striegan left her arm in Savardin's grasp, and with her other hand, plucked a small white tab out of her own fingers and stuck it to Savardin's forehead. I don't feel sorry for you, she said in Rodchai. It's just that I'm a doctor. Savardin looked at her with an unaccountable expression of horror. Let go of me. Let go, Savardin, and lie down, I said sharply. She stared 2 seconds more at Striegan, but then did as she was told. I'm not taking him as my patient, Striegan said to me, as Savardin's breathing slowed and her muscles slackened. It isn't more than first aid, and I don't want him panicking and breaking my things. I'm going to sleep now, I answered. We can talk more in the morning. It is morning. But she didn't argue further. She wouldn't be foolish enough to search my person while I slept. She would know how dangerous that would be. She wouldn't shoot me in my sleep either, though it would be a simple and effective way to be rid of me. Asleep, I would be an easy target for a bullet, unless I extended my armor now and left it up. But there was no need. Striegan wouldn't shoot me, at least not until she had the answers to her many questions. Even then she might not. I was too good a puzzle. Striegan wasn't in the main room when I woke, but the door into the bedroom was closed, and I assumed she was either asleep or wanted privacy. Savardin was awake, staring at me, fidgeting, rubbing her arms and shoulders. A week earlier, I'd had to prevent her from scraping her skin raw. She'd improved a great deal. The box of money lay where Striegan had left it. I checked it. It was undisturbed. Put it away, latched my pack closed, thinking the while what my next step should be. Citizen, I said to Savardin, brisk and authoritative, breakfast. What? She was surprised enough to stop moving for a moment. I lifted the corner of my lip just slightly. Shall I ask the doctor to check your hearing? The stringed instrument lay beside me, where I had set it the night before. I picked it up, plucked a fifth. Breakfast. I'm not your servant, she protested, indignant. I increased my sneer just the smallest increment. Then what are you? She froze, anger visible in her expression, and then very visibly debated with herself how best to answer me. But the question was, now, too difficult for her to answer easily. Her confidence in her superiority had apparently taken too severe a blow for her to deal with just now. She didn't seem to be able to find a response. I bent to the instrument and began to pick out a line of music. I expected her to sit where she was, sullen, until at the very least hunger drove her to prepare her own meal. Or maybe, much delayed, find something to say to me. I found I half hoped she'd take a swing at me so I could retaliate. But perhaps she was still under the influence of whatever Striegen had given her last night, even if only slightly. The door to Striegen's room opened, and she walked into the main living space, stopped, folded her arms, and cocked an eyebrow. Savardin ignored her. None of us said anything, and after 5 seconds, Striegen turned and strode to the kitchen and swung open a cabinet. It was empty, which I'd known the evening before. "You've cleaned me out, Breck, from the Gerentate," Striegen said without rancor, almost as though she thought it was funny. We were in very little danger of starving. Even in summer here, the outdoors effectively functioned as a huge freezer, and the unheated storage building held plenty of provisions. It was only a matter of fetching some and thawing them. "Savardin," I spoke in the casually disdainful tone I had heard from Savardin herself in the distant past, "bring some food from the shed." She froze and then blinked, startled. "Who the hell do you think you are?" "Language, citizen," I chided. "And I might ask you the same question." You ignorant nobody!" The sudden intensity of her anger had brought her close to tears again. "You think you're better than me? You're barely even human!" She didn't mean because I was an ancillary. I was fairly sure she hadn't yet realized that. She meant because I wasn't Rodchai, and perhaps because I might have implants that were common some places outside Roch space, and that would, in Rodchai eyes, compromise my humanity. "I wasn't bred to be your servant." I can move very, very quickly. I was standing, and my arm halfway through its swing before I registered my intention to move. The barest fraction of a second passed, during which I could have possibly checked myself. And then it was gone, and my fist connected with Savardin's face, too quickly for her to even look surprised. She dropped, falling backward onto her pallet, blood pouring from her nose, and lay unmoving. "Is he dead?" asked Striegen, still standing in the kitchen, her voice mildly curious. I made an ambiguous gesture. "You're the doctor." She walked over to where Savardin lay, unconscious and bleeding, gazed down at her. "Not dead," she pronounced, "though I'd like to make sure the concussion doesn't turn into anything worse." I gestured resignation. "It is as Amat wills," I said, and put on my coat and went outside to bring in food. Chapter 6. On Shaserna, in Ors, the justice of Ente 7 Issa, who had accompanied Lieutenant Skyat to Jen Shinnan's, sat with me in the lower level of the house. She had a name beyond her designation, one I never used, though I knew it. Even Lieutenant Skyat sometimes addressed individual human soldiers under her command as merely 7 Issa, or by their segment numbers. I brought out a board and counters, and we played a silent 2 games. "Can't you let me win a time or two?" she asked, when the second was concluded, and before I could answer, a thump sounded from the upper floor and she grinned. "It looks like Lieutenant Stiff can unbend after all." and she cast me a look, intended to share the joke. Her amusement at the contrast between Ann's usual careful formality and what was obviously going on upstairs between her and Lieutenant Skyot. But the instant after Seven Issa had spoken, her smile faded.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean anything by it. It's just what we..."
"I know," I said. "I took no offense." Seven Issa frowned and made a doubtful gesture with her left hand, awkwardly, her gloved fingers still curled around half a dozen counters.
"Ships have feelings."
"Yes, of course. Without feelings, insignificant decisions become excruciating attempts to compare endless arrays of inconsequential things. It's just easier to handle those with emotions. But as I said, I took no offense." Seven Issa looked down at the board and dropped the counters she held into one of its depressions. She stared at them a moment and then looked up.
"You hear rumors about ships and people they like, and I'd swear your face never changes, but..."
I engaged my facial muscles, smiled, an expression I'd seen many times. Seven Issa flinched.
"Don't do that,"
she said, indignant, but still hushed, lest the lieutenant hear us. It wasn't that I'd gotten the smile wrong, I knew I hadn't. It was the sudden change from my habitual lack of expression to something human that some of the Seven Issas found disturbing. I dropped the smile.
"Otter's tits," swore Seven Issa.
"When you do that, it's like you're possessed or something."
She shook her head and scooped up the counters and began to distribute them around the board.
"All right, then, you don't want to talk about it? One more game."
The evening grew later. The neighbors' conversations turned slow and aimless and finally ceased as people picked up sleeping children and went to bed. Den's Eye arrived 4 hours before dawn, and I joined her, stepping into her boat without speaking. She didn't acknowledge my presence, and neither did her daughter, sitting in the stern. Slowly, nearly noiselessly, we slid away from the house. The vigil at the temple continued, the priest's prayers audible on the plaza as an intermittent shushing murmur. The streets, upper and lower, were silent, except for my own footsteps and the sound of the water. Dark, but for the stars brilliant overhead, the blinking of the prohibited zone's encircling buoys, and the light from the Temple of Ikt. The Seven Issa who had accompanied us back to Lieutenant Ann's house slept on a pallet on the ground floor. Lieutenant Ann and Lieutenant Skyot lay together on the upper floor, still and on the edge of sleep. No one else was out on the water with us. In the bottom of the boat I saw rope, nets, breathers, and a round, covered basket tied to an anchor. The daughter saw me look at it, and she kicked it under her seat with studied nonchalance. I looked away over the water, toward the blinking buoys, and said nothing. The fiction that they could hide or alter the information coming from their trackers was a useful one, even if no one actually believed it. Just inside the buoys, Denzai's daughter put a breather in her mouth and slid over the edge, a rope in her hand. The lake wasn't terribly deep, especially at this time of year. Moments later, she reemerged and climbed back aboard, and we pulled the crate up. A relatively easy job until it reached the surface, but the three of us managed to tip it into the boat without taking on too much water. I wiped mud off the lid. It was of Rodchai manufacture, but that wasn't too alarming in itself. I found the latch and popped it open. The guns within, long, sleek, and deadly, were the sort that had been carried by the Tan Mind troops before the annexation. I knew each one would have an identifying mark, and the marks of any guns confiscated by us would have been listed and reported, so that I could consult the inventory and determine, more or less immediately, if these were confiscated weapons or ones we had missed. If they were confiscated weapons, this situation would suddenly become a great deal more complicated than it seemed at the moment.